Welcome to another edition of Real Prospector Radio, featuring today Robert Palmer of the Robert Palmer Family of Companies, followed by our featured guest Jim Shields from Jacksonville, Titus Group and Associates, very active in investment properties for investors and hedge funds. He talks about single-family homes and foreclosures. And he was brought to us by Peter Cook, who you'll remember from an earlier show. But let's begin with dropping in on a recent social media workshop conducted by Robert Palmer.
Let's jump right in here and let's talk about social media. A lot of agents I see are not using social media correctly. I have to admit, for a long time, I wasn't really a fan of social media. I didn't use it correctly. And I'm going to talk about what changed, what got me to get more engaged with social media. And two, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of people telling you things about social media, but they're coming from the wrong place. And so one of the things that I've realized about social media, and today is really more about strategy, not implementation. So I'm not going to sit here today on the webinar and show you how to create a Facebook ad. We're not going to go click by click. I'm not going to show you how to tweet, how to join Facebook. There are lots of great resources out there to do that. Realestation is actually going to take everything I teach here today and put it into some cool tutorials that will be published on their website over the coming weeks. So if you do want to know exactly how to implement the strategies I talk about today, keep an eye on Realestation for those. We'll send an email blast out to anybody who was on the webinar or who joined us here in person. So you can have those kind of step-by-step implementation guides. Today is more strategy. I'm going to share with you the things I'm doing, the strategies I'm using, how I use social media, how it fits into my overall media plan, and how you can use it in your daily life. Also, I'm going to share with you a lot of stories I have from agents I've worked with to try to improve their social media presence, to improve their advertising, and some successes they've seen just by implementing small things that don't cost a lot of money. And then finally, we will talk about what advertising campaigns look like on social media. So the first half is going to be about the stuff you can do for free that you all should be doing. And then the second half, we're going to dig into some actual strategies I'm using for advertising on social media to generate new followers, to generate new people to find out about your brand, and how to get some listing leads out of that, right? Because everybody here wants more listings. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, I think we're seeing a time right now where obviously listings are in demand. It is a seller's market in most parts of the country. And so we want to help you be at the top of that game and figure out how to get more listing leads. And there's a great way to do that with social media advertising. So today, again, is about strategy. The first thing I want to jump right into is you've got to tap your influencers. All right. So a lot of people don't think about Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as really being the type of social platform that it is. And if you just throw a post out there, chances are it's not going to be seen by anyone. Facebook used to be a lot more lenient with this. And when posts, you know, fan pages would post, it would go to a lot of their viewers. But once Facebook started trying to monetize, right, and Twitter's going down the same path, the more these companies try to monetize their feeds, right? So if I'm going to pay money to show up in the feed and your stuff's going to show up for free, they make more money, obviously, by selling more ads. And they're trying to walk a thin line between too many ads, too much promotional information, but then keeping it relevant, because the reason we go to our news feeds, the reason we go to Twitter is not to be shown ads. It's to interact with our social sphere, our social influencers, our social connections. And so they're trying to run this balance. And so one thing they decided is, well, hey, we're going to cut back greatly the amount of juice that we give to fan pages that are trying to promote, because these guys are basically getting advertisements without having to pay us any money. So where maybe 6 months or a year ago, putting out a post on your fan page would get a decent amount of likes and shares and impressions, today that's just not the case, because Facebook wants us all to pay for that. Now, there's ways to get around that. One of the things I do personally is I use my personal Facebook for most of my marketing and most of my connections, because they haven't dinged the personal Facebooks in the same way. The second thing is what we're going to talk about now, which is this whole idea of tapping your influencers. All right, so I have what I call my social squad. All right, and a couple of them are here in the room today. Joe, can you hear me? Joe Jones in the back, can you hear me all right? All right, good. Joe Jones is one of my social squad. So what this means is, when I put out a piece of content that I want to get looked at, that I want to have impressions, that I want to quote unquote go viral amongst my sphere, I'm on my cell phone text messaging a group of people saying, hey, I just put up a post. Can you like it for me? Can you share it for me? Can you comment on it for me? Because these are the signals that tell Facebook, hey, this is a really good post. That last post Robert put out about being on the beach that nobody cared about, that one we buried. But this one, all of a sudden, we've got Joe Jones over here liking it. We've got Jill Palmer over here liking it. You know, we've got all these different friends of mine liking it in different places, which sends a signal to Facebook that says, hey, this is pretty good content. This is a pretty good post. And the more they share it, the more they like it, the more they comment on it, the better the post will do. But this isn't going to happen organically. We're all busy. We all have busy lives. The chance that Joe was just going to be sitting around at home staring at his Facebook feed, right, at the exact moment that I put out an important piece of content is probably not going to happen. We can't leave this to chance, right? And that's where one of the quickest things you can do to increase your response rates, to increase the amount of views and the amount of reach you're getting from your social media interactions is to have this share squad. And so whether it's friends you have on Twitter, friends you have on Facebook, the key is whenever you put out something important, something you want all of your friends and fans to see, you need to reach out to these people with a good old-fashioned telephone, right, or a text message and say, hey, I just put out a piece of content. Do me a favor. Like it, share it, comment on it. And the more of this you can manufacture, the more of this you can put together, the better chance you have for a piece of content to get out there and be seen by the masses, right? The people that you can't text message, that you can't call, that you don't have a good enough relationship with to be in your social squad, right? They're there to help promote you just by clicking like, share, or comment. And now it's going to go out to more people. It's going to go out to a bigger chunk of your friends and their friends. And so usually my kind of method is I'll post it on my page, and then I will share it personally. And then I will tap my social squad to then begin liking and sharing and putting it out to additional people. So that's the first thing we can look at is have that social squad. The second thing is you can't be afraid to ask for this interaction, right? If we want results, we've got to ask for them. If we want business, we have to ask for business. So when it comes to this, you can't be afraid to call your friends and family and say, hey, I need you to share this. I need you to like this. Or even in your post, say, hey, you know, just closed on a house with so-and-so. Please share this with your friends. Right, or here's something exciting going on in my business. Hey, I just got this new listing. Please share it with your friends. If you ask for those interactions on social media, if you ask people to retweet for you, right? I mean, we're creatures of that manner. When we're told to do something, when we're asked to do something, we're more likely to do it. You know, I'm looking at my Twitter feed and I see a tweet from a friend. I don't instantly think, wow, they probably want me to retweet this to get it out to my sphere. But if it says, you know, if they tag me and say, hey, RP Robert Palmer, share this with your friends and there's a link there, I'm much more likely to retweet it. I'm much more likely to share it. I'm much more likely to take the action they want me to take. So you cannot be afraid to ask for those interactions. And then the final one is to maximize your clients who are influencers. So I've got a real estate agent that I work with a lot on his marketing, and his Facebook results were just dismal, right? And so one of the first things we noticed is his wife had a lot more friends. And when she posted stuff, people actually liked it and interacted with it. And when he posted stuff, nobody cared. And so the first thing we did is we had his wife start sharing and liking all of his real estate related stuff. And the first thing that happened here is a lot of his wife's friends didn't even realize he was a real estate agent. How much business did he leave on the table there, right? And so we had him add realtor to the end of his name. And there's some people that question whether or not this violates Facebook terms of service. I have never seen anyone get kicked off of Facebook for changing their last name to Palmer-Realtor or whatever your last name is. But now instantly anyone who sees you in their newsfeed knows what you do. And that's the first part of this battle, right? Here we have someone, his wife has friends who they have a relationship with, and they have no idea what he does. They have no idea he's a real estate agent. So by simply starting to put out his posts about real estate and then having them shared by his wife, liked by his wife, they tapped a whole new sphere of influence of people there. The other big thing we did, and this comes into maximizing clients who are influencers, he had a client that he sold a house for, and we noticed that they had a ton of Facebook followers, a ton of Facebook friends. Every time they put out a post, it got liked, it got shared. And so he simply called the client and said, hey, would you mind putting a post up about the great job I did selling your home? And then would you mind asking some of your friends to share it and like that post on Facebook? He ended up with over 1,000 views, all right, on this post for completely free, just by tapping into a client who was a social influencer. And the cool thing is, because this is proof of performance, because now that person's friends are saying, oh, wow, Judy just sold her home with Matt and had a great experience, got great results. They see it in their Facebook feed, not as a sponsored story, not as an advertisement, not as you bragging about yourself, but as one of your clients who is a social influencer taking the time to post about you and then taking the time to ask a group of their friends, their share squad, their social squad, to get in there and help promote that. All of a sudden, this thing went viral amongst that little group of people, and there was proof of performance. They said, well, hey, if he did a great job for Judy, he'll probably do a great job for me. And he actually got some listings off of this. He got business off of this. He did some home valuations. He got a couple buyer leads. He got a couple listing appointments, one of which I think converted, all from asking a past client who happened to be a social influencer, who happened to have a decent amount of friends on Facebook to share that. And this is something you should all be taking advantage of. It doesn't cost you anything. And most of you as real estate agents build a great relationship with your clients to where they're happy to do this stuff for you, right? You just helped them with the biggest transaction of their lives. You just helped them get their home under contract in 10 days, 12 days, 15 days. Whatever you did, you got above asking price. When you're doing great stuff like this, you need them to help you, but you can't be afraid to ask. And so if you're not afraid to ask and you're willing to maximize the clients who are influencers, you can see your results from social media really start to explode.
Thank you so much, Robert Palmer. Time we move on now and bring aboard Jim Shields of Jacksonville, very, very wrapped up in investment properties for investor groups located throughout the world. And you know, Jim, in 16 years of the industry, you have seen a lot of changes.
Definitely have. And good changes happening for the last 5 years, especially in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville seems to be in everybody's conversation, not just socially, but as I talk to business people, I talk to airline people, talking to the NFL folks, Jacksonville is just becoming such a prominent hub, not just of the Southeast, but almost internationally. People are always talking about relocating or at least having a presence in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. And you know why? One of the biggest things that no one talks about is Jacksonville is probably one of the most affordable coastal cities with a large economy in the nation, if not the most affordable coastal city in the nation. And you just don't find those two words together, coastal and affordable. There's different areas where it's higher priced, obviously the Ponte Vedra and St. Augustine's, but Jacksonville, the city, the median price for homes is much further below most other areas, which for an investor like myself, obviously helps the returns, helps with the value increases that we're looking for over the next few years. And those are a great combo to have together, both cash flow and the opportunity for value increase.
How devastating was the crash 2006, 7, and 8 to Jacksonville and the surrounding Duval County area?
Well, it was painful. I mean, anyone who was holding a lot of property, It was painful, but it was... Let me just tell you this. I owned a lot of property down in near Kennedy Space Center, and that took an absolute beating down there. Comparatively to here, comparing it here to there, not even close to as bad, Rob. It just what happened here in Jacksonville, what helped. We did have dips, but not the extreme dips, especially in the neighborhoods that I work in. Because rents still perform. There were still jobs here, and that helped people continue to pay their rent. Where if you go to an area like where I was down near Titusville, well, it was dependent on one industry, and that was the space station. And as you know, the space center had huge, huge job cuts. So with no economy and overbuilt units down there, which Jacksonville didn't have as bad as South Florida, That's not a good combo to be in a huge recession.
Yeah, they took a double hit. There's no doubt about it. I had some commercial investments over there, and it definitely did. You talk about the space program cutbacks and then just the national cutbacks, and it really did hurt the area.
So, big time. Yeah, I'll never invest in an area that has one industry again. Mm-hmm. You hear about different real estate investors that go to different towns in the Midwest. They're based around an army base or some sort of bigger company. The issue I've seen is when it's good, it's good. But as Warren Buffett says, when the tide goes out, you're going to see who's not wearing a bathing suit or not. And you're just very dependable on one thing. And the good thing about Jacksonville, again, we have such a diverse economy. I mean, it really is truly incredible. And when we have people come in from Australia and Israel and California and New York, and they look and they say, you weren't kidding. You know, with the amount of universities, the amount of hospitals, the amount of our international shipping is just huge. Our shipping logistics, having the 95 and the 10 meet here, our insurance now, our tech industry now, the retirement economy with baby boomers. You know, Yahoo Travel and Forbes are always ranking us in the top 10 for new retirees. So we have such a diverse economy. And I didn't even mention military. Which mm-hmm. is, I think, about 28,000 jobs here. And what I've learned, Rob, is simple as that. When you have a diverse economy, there's more jobs, there's more money to pay the rent. It really does come down to being that simple.
Well, it's got a great reputation. It's a city that is constantly on the grow, but keeping up with it as much as it can due to the constraints of the ocean and the bay and all that sort of thing, and the ongoing traffic on both interstates. So it really does have everything. It's the insurance hub of the world. It's got to be with all those big buildings. And, of course, with the expansion down toward Ponte Vedra, the expansion by J. Turner Butler, you know, from back in the day when J. Turner was a toll road. I can remember that, to today where it's a bustling area, lots of things going on. So during the 16 years, one of the things I wanted to touch on is you've seen the industry change. You've seen the professionalism of the industry just really skyrocket to all new levels, that it is such a profession. People can make a lot of money. They can specialize. They're not doing it part-time. But I've also looked at the social media part of it. About 16 years ago, how much of your office, how much of your utilization for lead generation, let's say, or sphere of influence was done with any matter of online presence?
None. 16 years ago. Now, with the technology we've built, the following we've built, the clients we've worked with for years, we honestly get a property, renovate it, and get it set up with our management group, and we send out an email, and it's sold. So all of our sales actually go through direct client emails to properties within the parameters that our investors look for. So now all of our sales, I don't work with any local investors, actually. We have a large network of international and national investors, and it's all, most of it's automated now, to be honest with you.
How do you broaden that range? I mean, are you happy with the sphere of influence you've got and that collection of investors, or what do you do at sometimes? Is there a 3-year cycle, a 4-year cycle where you say, hey, we need to reach out and put more people in the pipeline?
Well, we're always growing. I mean, we speak at different events out in California and in Israel and Australia. So we're always speaking about real estate, and so the sphere is always growing. And it's pretty easy for us to attract people here because we don't just sell properties in Jacksonville. We own a lot of rental property. And that is one of the reasons that investors resonate with us, because we're not just convincing them to buy rental property here. They normally, if they come in, they see the property, they know that we own a property on the same street or maybe a block away, because we're very strategic there. So building up is an ongoing process. What you'll see now, though, is as we've built up, it's almost like we start to get to the point where there's almost more demand than homes, because the homes now, and I know investors who are listening out there who are, you know, pretty much on the inside track of Jacksonville. I used to be able to offer on dozens of homes in each of the areas that I focus on. And now there's only a few available now. The market is turning, without a doubt. And that's not just my opinion. That's going off the statistical data of what's happening. The market is turning, and it's happening right now. So anyone who's listening to the media saying, oh, I don't know if it's coming back still, I'd be very shy to listen to that advice.
Is the building infrastructure keeping up? I mean, are we building enough office buildings? What's going to happen to your investment properties that are right now brick and mortar for retail that may be changing in the near future?
You know, it's a good question, and I don't honestly follow the office buildings as much as the jobs, and because I don't play the commercial game very much. I'm strictly residential. We do residential foreclosure homes. That's what we've done for 16 years. That's our main forte. So I don't know the answer on that. Now, what I do know the answer on, again, is that affordability index. For the type of properties I do and stick to, most builders in the area, they don't want to really go under 200,000. There are some people doing it on smaller levels. But a lot of the bigger builders, you know, that we'd all recognize their names, they don't want to do anything under 200,000 because the spread's not there for them. And what that does for us is, that's why I work there, Rob, is our inventory is relatively fixed. Again, we're buying homes built in the 50s and 60s and totally refurbishing them. New roof, new heating and cooling, new plumbing, you know, but these are concrete block little soldiers. And that's what we stick to. So for us, I'm kind of excited to see, because again, my main strategy is buy and hold. Yes, I work with other investors, but I have a portfolio. And what I want to see happen is we're buying these properties so far below replacement costs, because, you know, these block homes would be very expensive to rebuild from scratch, that I'm looking to see the values get pressed up. And we're seeing that here in Jacksonville. I mean, it started slower out at the beaches and down in where I live, St. Augustine and Ponte Vedra. Those areas have come back with a vengeance. And now it's trickling over into main Jacksonville, which is inevitable. That's how it always works. The more affluent areas with less land, closer to the water, that's where it starts. And we're seeing it kind of start to ripple out in the rest of Jacksonville.
Jim, tell me now, your company goes out, you procure the homes, whether they be foreclosures or just the best buys you can possibly get. You amass them as what, groups of properties or singles, and then your investors buy them to what end?
They buy them turned around, you know, totally refurbished with a tenant in place, our management in place, and they look long-term. These are long-term players. My preference in the real estate game is to look long-term. You know, I still believe in the old thing of having a portfolio of rental real estate that feeds you every month. And that's what I'm looking for and something I can pass down to my kids. And our most of our investors have that long-term thinking. They're not looking to get into one of our houses and sell it in the next 6 to 12 months. They're looking out 4 or 5 years for what we're seeing, the demographics, for just the overall economy, what's going to happen here, what the trends we're seeing. And we don't want to bet on, but we're kind of following some stats where we think it could be a good time to cash out. So they're looking long-term. I'm looking even longer. I'm not looking 5 years. I'm looking 25 years on some of this stuff. So that's how we're long-term players, not really the fix and flip guys, which there's nothing wrong with that. It provides a great service working with first-time home buyers who couldn't do it themselves to get the property turned around. You work with them. That's great. But ours is more working with investors who want long-term cash flow and are looking for growth in a potential growth area like Jacksonville, which Jacksonville is just has all the signs.
Oh, sure. Now, let me ask you this. When you're dealing with these groups, are you putting these out on some sort of an internet site that you own? Or how do they know what your portfolio is, let's say, Friday, as far as what properties are available?
Yeah, we usually release about 2 properties a week, and it's a private group. We have a large following now, so it's a private group. We release out. We have what we call a recipe for success, a certain type of home we stick to. So the people are very well versed in them. They understand it. The returns are very simple to follow. So as we release 1 to 2 a week, it's on a private email group, and then usually one of our investors will step up and decide to buy it. So we do have a website, which is jacksinvestments.com, which you can learn more about the Jacksonville area. You can learn more about the type of properties. You can see as many before and afters as you want to see, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens, and access to more information if you need it. So the web presence is a good educator, but also our direct contact when we go to different conferences is huge. And then once they know that, then it's really just it's a private email offering going out to just our investors that have approached us and are wanting to work with us. And that's how we do it. We do use the MLS locally, but we've really stepped outside the box to run our business. I use the MLS to find properties, but not to sell properties. We do list them, and sometimes that happens, but we more work direct with our clients that we've built a relationship with.
And pretty well direct with the banks and the mortgage companies on getting the foreclosed properties?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously the banks have their favorite real estate agents, their REO agents, and we've built up a pretty good reputation since we bought straight through the meltdown, and I've always closed. So yeah, that with the volume has privilege. So we're in close contact with a lot of the bigger REO brokers in the area, and that helps. And we buy cash and close quick. Wow. And the banks like that. They don't like contingencies. They don't like a long escrow. So we make it as easy as possible, and they do the same for us.
Investment properties in the Jacksonville area with Jim Shields. And Jim, what about your personal stuff that you would like to get out to contact-wise for people who may want to reach out to you for advice or maybe to become an investor or to maybe feed you some product?
Yeah, we all three sound great. So if you're interested in what we do, just go to www.jaxinvestments.com. you'll get a feel of us, our history, what we've done, who we work with, the type of properties we work with, the type of work that we do, and just some enlightening stuff about the Jacksonville market and the good things we're seeing happen here.
I want to thank you so much for taking time out and doing this for us on Real Prospector Radio. I'm sure we're going to be in touch again. I'm kind of hoping that at some point we can get three or four of you around a round table. And
that would be fun.
Do a 30 or 40 minute show, whatever Jessica wants to do. But I can see with the energy that's coming out of just these 15 minute shows and 20 minute shows, that would be just a phenomenal thing to put up on the net and to put up on the iHeartRadio channel that we're getting ready to join. So Jim, thank you so much. Continued success for Jacksonville as well. We love it up there. I know our CEO has a presence up there as well, and our company has a presence there. So thank you so much, and have a good day.
All right. Thank you.